Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show we don't take calls. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have everybody with us here as we roll into the final week of 2020. And we're not exactly going to do a review of the best and worst of 2020 because it was all the worst. It was the worst of 2,000 years of history, I think. Well, I mean, our family here at the Weekly Worldview compound, at the McBurney compound, we've done better than most. And so we're thankful and blessed in 2020. So we're thankful and blessed despite the relative discomfort of the year. It's not as bad as being tossed into a gulag back in the 1930s, right? I mean, everything's relative. I continue reading Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago. So that's why my spirits are so high. That's why I'm feeling so good. If there's ever a more appropriate year to read a more appropriate book. Let's start. Where do we want to start here? Let's jump right into the dim new world. Ladies and gentlemen, over in Beijing, which is in China, red Chinese communist dictatorship, new outbreaks of the coronavirus are being recorded, and so the government there in Beijing has canceled gatherings, and they've ordered cinemas, libraries, and museums to operate at 75% capacity. They've declared there shall be no business trips outside of the city, and officials in one port city have tested almost 5 million people. Why? 24 confirmed infections. So 24 confirmed infections of a city of, I don't know how many billions of people live in Beijing. Millions, tens of millions. 24 new infections it's shocking how these communist dictatorships can now use the pretext of infectious disease to completely overturn what little liberty their citizens had left. It's shocking. This is Beijing in the dim new world. So that's what's happening in China and Los Angeles and New York and Jersey City and Battle Creek, Michigan, and all of that. Really, really, really disturbing what the communist dictatorships are able to do in this dim new world with people absolutely frightened over the prospect of even the possibility of a new infectious disease. But let's go from there as we close out 2020. By the way, did everybody have a Merry Christmas? Ho, 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 Merry Christmas. We had a great time here at the McBurney compound. We went out and visited other people, which is fairly unusual for us. The entire Christmas week and weekend, we interacted with other human beings in flagrant violation of the government dictates that we should stay at home. We did not. We went out, visited other people. It's possible that we infected other people with various pathogens that could cost them their health or their lives. But oddly enough, both we and they all agreed that it was worth the risk. And if they die, I'm very sorry. If I get sick and die, I'll be very, I don't know, I'll probably be all right with that. Anyway, I'm laying in bed last Monday evening. Why? Because I got sick. I got sick last Monday. I had a fever that ran up to 101. Now, for me, my average temperature is in the 97s. I'm always below the 98.6. I don't know why. My heart rate is always in the 40s or 50s when I'm at rest, which apparently that's not so great. But anyways, so I get up to a fever of 101, And I decide I'm going to go to bed early. And as I'm drifting off into that, you know, when your fever's above 100, you have really interesting, you know, there's like light shows and all kinds of things going on in your head. And all I could think of was, man, if this is actually COVID, this is going to be embarrassing. I hope I recover. I hope I don't die. That would be embarrassing for my family to have to explain. In fact, I have a story on that later on in the show. But I just want to reiterate that I never said that this virus was fake or that this is all just a conspiracy. I believe it's real, and I believe people get sick. And even in rare instances, young, healthy people get sick and die from this virus because it's new. Yes, I believe all of that. I just decided back sometime around March of 2020 just to not be so scared of it that I acted like a complete idiot and allowed power-mad, vacuous overlords to take away everything I've built for my entire life, for myself and my children and my posterity and my community. I just decided it wasn't worth that. So anyway, but I never said it was fake, that's all. And I didn't, but Monday, so I had some kind of stomach bug. I woke up on Tuesday, I felt great. And I've felt fantastic ever since. Outstanding, as a matter of fact. Better than average. Better than at any time in 2019, I've felt this whole week. So, all right. Now, meanwhile, we go to the politics file, where a poll from, let's see, who ran this poll? Let's see, Rasmussen, another utterly discredited poll, gets coverage in the news. Why? I don't know. But Rasmussen ran a poll, 47% believe the election was stolen, 47% believe Biden won fairly. So basically, with the margin of error the margin of error with Rasmussen now apparently between somewhere between 3 and 30%, a plus or minus, I think. Anyway, that means that voters are sharply, evenly divided on whether or not the last election was a total fraud. Which means if this is true, which it's Rasmussen, so we have to believe that it's probably not. But because it made the news, it's grist for the show, I guess. Anyway, if this is true, if the polls, which have been proven completely unreliable, turn out to be true, this means basically that there's going to be a civil war. That's what this means. Not to put too fine a point on it and not to scare anyone, but politics is war by other means. And so when those other means are removed from the equation, that means actual war, where people start shooting and killing each other, or where the government, which is allowed to just run rampant and trample our liberties, starts arresting people, putting them on trial, throwing them in prison, and all of that stuff. So that's what the Rasmussen poll means. Thankfully, the Rasmussen poll has been proven to be completely unreliable. So we have no idea what's going on. I mean, I know what's happening in my little circle, and you know what's happening in yours, and let's just accept that as reality. And we'll move forward from there, knowing that we do not want to throw our neighbors into prison camps, nor do we want to kill them. At least not at this point, right? Not in my circle, I don't. And if you don't, then maybe there won't be a war. But it looks pretty weird, that's all. Thank you, Mr. Rasmussen. We appreciate your relatively unreliable opinion on all of that. So from there, we go immediately into the Queering of America file, which continues, ladies and gentlemen, despite the pandemic. Despite the pandemic and the apparent fear of death, imminent death, by a significant plurality of Americans, the homosexuals and the transgendered and the other garden variety deviants and perverts continue their long march toward oblivion. In front of God and everybody, the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts are in a recruitment war against each other, and now it's come to litigation. Yes, they've gone to law against one another. Yes, the Girl Scouts are in a recruitment war that is leading to marketplace confusion with the Boy Scouts. Why? Because the Boy Scouts are recruiting girls. Which, I mean, do you need to say anything more? I guess you do these days, because that would seem odd enough, but that's not. Let's see what's happening here. The lawyers for the Boy Scouts blame the Girl Scouts for reacting to their expansion plans to recruit girls with anger and alarm. So the Girl Scouts, are angered and alarmed that the Boy Scouts are recruiting girls into scouting. Are you confused? I'm so confused I can barely string my words together. I feel like Joe Biden. I'm tripping over my upper lip and I just can't figure it out. So the Boy Scouts say, now they filed statements, you know, legal papers, documents, whatever, against each other. The Boy Scouts say the Girl Scouts are just angry. And the Boy Scouts accuse the Girl Scouts of launching a, quote, ground war, unquote, a ground war against the Boy Scouts. Meanwhile, the girls, lawyers for the Girl Scouts say that the Boy Scouts have set off an explosion of confusion. We've got explosions and ground wars between the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts in light of all the gender confusion and gender bending and all the deviancy and perversion that's being promoted. What do you expect to happen? Everybody gets confused, and eventually they start fighting with one another. And that's what's happening right now between the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts have released a statement because none of them actually wanted to get up behind a lectern and take questions on this preposterous and ridiculous issue. So they just released a statement regarding the Girl Scouts and the lawsuits and everything. The Boy Scouts say, quote, "We applaud every organization that builds character and leadership in children, including the Girl Scouts. All families and communities benefit from programs that best fit their needs."
Gross.
Unquote. Well, that's the statement that came out from the Boy Scouts who now recruit girls. So where do they get the name Boy Scouts? I think they just call themselves Scouts of America now. The Gay Scouts, the Queer Scouts, I don't know. Anyway, the Boy Scouts of America organization insists that their recruits pledge to be, quote, "trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, and kind." We used to say straight, but we don't say that anymore. Because we're the Gay Scouts. All right. Just sicko. And then let's go to Rockford, Illinois. Rockford, Illinois, it's the heartland. For the domestic tranquility file, we're out in Rockford. Let's see here. 2020 is the deadliest year on record for Rockford. 35 homicides. Yeah. Violent crimes up 20%. And shots fired reports. You know those, right? Shots where people fired. Call the police, shots fired. Scary. Up 50%. Yeah, it's the deadliest year on record for Rockford, Illinois. It may be a suburb of Chicago, I'm not sure. I can't remember. If it is a suburb of Chicago, that explains all the mayhem. But anyway, I always thought of Rockford, Illinois. When I heard about it, I always thought the girl, kind of chunky with the curly hair, like, Rockford, Illinois, welcome. Come on in, it's the bowling alley. It's bingo night. Anyway, three people were killed and three others wounded on Saturday night in a shooting at a Rockford, Illinois bowling alley. A 37-year-old man was taken into custody. Just another day in Rockford. Police said the attack appears to have been random. Although the policeman being interviewed said, quote, "At this point, it's all unknown." So why do the people at the Rockford Star report that it appears to be random when the cop they interviewed says, "At this point, it's all unknown"? Could you just not report what things maybe look like or appear to be? And could we just maybe wait until we actually know what's happening before we report what things look like or feel like? Or how did the reporter feel? Maybe that's what the reporter should have asked the sheriff's deputy. How do you feel right now? We could report on how the deputy feels. Well, it's terrible. There's blood all over the place. People are dead. I don't feel good. But no, we don't wait until we know what's happening anymore. Especially over at the Rockford Star, the Rockford Register and Star. We report what things look like, what things appear to be, what things feel like, what things might be, what could be. Apparently, we don't know. It's possibility. Because in the dim new world, we're not supposed to be able to know anything for sure ever anymore. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Just wanting to direct your attention to the fact that the good old days weren't all that good. Remember before the pandemic and the lockdowns and before the Marxist takedown of America, before the election was stolen before our eyes, and before lawlessness became the coin of the realm, our days were filled with mass shootings and sexual perverts trying to recruit our children into a godless hellscape. That's what was happening. That's probably why the lockdowns and the pandemics, probably why it all occurred. Because everyone was just so deviously perverted and corrupt that we left ourselves vulnerable to being conquered by the most voracious and aggressive and ambitious deviants among us. And indeed, that's what's happened. In fact, we go to the insurrection file to Seattle, where Mikhail Andrew Baker is a 23-year-old Seattle resident. He is, he was born a male, but he now identifies as a trans non-binary. This is according to thepostmillennial.com. Mikhail Andrew Baker identifies as a trans non-binary, not even a person, not even a human being, just a trans non-binary unit, or I don't know. Prefers the pronouns they and them. Mikhail. He's also an Antifa militant. A militant, I said. Yeah, Antifa militant, which means he's a Marxist agitator. Let's see. Let's go to Mikhail. Why am I talking about Mikhail? I'll get to that. He says, I am a revolutionary anarchist. I see open warfare against fascists and the state as a necessary evil to achieve liberation. That's according to 23-year-old Mikhail Andrew Baker. Mikhail, the post-Columbine generation. All right, let's see. He would have been born 23 years ago. Would have been, what, 1997-ish? Yeah, so came to awareness of himself in a post-Columbine world where in my mind, it's right around 99, right around Columbine, where the government schools were handed over utterly to the Marxist agitators and propaganda ministers. It just seems to me, that's just my perspective, probably because of my age and what I've It just seems to me after Columbine, the schools were utterly handed over in every zip code, even the smallest towns, Rockford, Illinois. Anyway, that's just what it seems like. So here we've got Mikhail, product of the public schools, revolutionary, anarchist, non-binary, trans, they, them. Also another tweet from the Antifa militant. Quote, what's the point of having guns if you're not going to use them to shoot racists? Unquote. So since the late 90s, we've been, I shouldn't say we because I haven't participated, but perhaps you have in the government schools. The government schools have been teaching our children. I'm sorry, not my children, but perhaps yours. That there are racists and fascists. America is a fascist, racist country. And so these kids have grown up on a steady diet of all that. And not unlike a generation that was raised to understand that Adolf Hitler was a fascist and a Nazi and a murderer, they think that joining the forces of Antifa to fight against the fascists and the Nazis, they think it's good. So with the riots and the looting and the breaking of the windows and the shooting of people and all of that, and the rioting, did I mention the rioting? They think that's all good. I've got a few of them that are my friends on Facebook. How I ever became friends with these people, I have no idea. It's one of these things where you click, okay, he wants to be my friend, I'll be his friend. Turns out he's a Nazi, Antifa, trans freak. And I got a few of them, all right? And maybe you listen to the show. Perhaps. Anyway, by the way, Mikhail Andrew Baker, the non-binary trans Antifa militant, is also a camp counselor for children at camp. Why? Because that's the reality in America today. Your kids could easily encounter someone who wants to influence their life, who is a trans non-binary Antifa militant who believes that open warfare is necessary to achieve liberation against the state. That's all. All right. That's where we are. That's why I'm in such a good mood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go now to, I told you earlier how I had a fever of 101. I was worried that if I died of COVID, it could be embarrassing. I mean, I'd be glad that I wouldn't have to explain myself because I would have passed from the scene. You know, but for other people, they'd had to say, yeah, McBurney, you know, he talked at the good game, but COVID took him down there at the end. Anyway, we've got to, and this is the thing, folks, is the media is so vicious and so cynical and so hell-bent on destroying anyone who posits even the slightest concern about the narrative of fear and a dictatorship that has gripped the nation. They're so vicious against you that if you were to die of COVID or if anyone around, well, just listen to this story from Graves County, Kentucky. I'm sorry, that's the wrong story. We've got Pastor Todd Dunn, Fort Worth, Texas, Second Mile Church, who all along for this entire pandemic hysterical freakout, this relatively intelligent pastor has called the coronavirus restrictions a plot of the left and a countermeasure against Christians in America. Uh-huh, do you think, Pastor Dunn? Yeah, Pastor Todd Dunn. He still doesn't believe. Now, here's what happened. Pastor Dunn was in the hospital this past week where his 84-year-old father and his 79-year-old mother died within hours of each other. And both of them attended their son's church. They got sick around Thanksgiving. So the Yahoo News, by the way, where I got this, they're sure to stick to. They started getting sick right around Thanksgiving when all them damn Christians wanted to get together with all their gatherings. Defying the life-saving orders of the state, these Christians wanted to get together. So his parents got sick, right? Right around Thanksgiving, uh-huh. And all the time he's calling this a plot of the left. He says it's against Christians. And now both of his parents are dead. That's right. They died within minutes of each other, hours of each other at the hospital. Now, Pastor Dunn, by the way, the headline of the article from Yahoo News, Yahoo News, what is that? Is that even real? Anyway, it says, pastor who disregarded COVID loses both parents to virus. Well, I don't see anywhere in the article where he disregarded it. He just said that the restrictions were a plot of the left and they were against Christians in America, which is obvious and true. But it doesn't matter. If you posit even a single iota of information that is in any way a pushback against the lockdowns and the Marxist takedown of America and Christianity and the church and all of that, well, then they're just waiting to pounce. Should anyone around you get sick or die, they're going to basically blame you. So they remind us that his parents were parishioners at his church. Yep. They actually went to his church. And now he says in the interview that he doesn't believe there's anything he could have done different to help his parents because he said they followed guidelines. They wore their masks in church. But that doesn't matter, Pastor Dunn. It's because of what you said. Because you said that this was a plot of the left, because you said it was against Christians, we know now that your parents are dead. And basically, you killed them. You're responsible. But they were wearing masks. Shut up. We heard what you said. Anyway, Pastor Dunn closes the interview with this fact. He says, I will see my parents again. And that's what's getting me through this. He said, I know I'll see them again. Anyway, so he's bowed. He's not broken. Of course, if your parents die, that's a bummer, especially if they both die right around the same time. Anyway, 84 years old and 79. That's not a bad run. It's longer than I would like. I mean, I would like to live longer. But anyway, here we go. That's it. That's the widespread cynicism file. So if you've ever said anything, questioning anything about the hysterical flip-out panic and lockdown over the coronavirus, just wait. Anyone gets sick or dies around you, you're just, you're the scapegoat. I guess that's actually misplaced. Anyway, but whatever. You'll be blamed is what I'm trying to say. We all know it's your fault. All right, now from one pastor, we go to another pastor into the domestic tranquility file. And so do you all remember the Declaration of Independence? I have to remind people that one of the reasons our forefathers instituted our current form of government was to ensure the domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense. Can I even remember the exact words? Well, I know the gist of it, so I don't have to know every word of it. To provide for the common defense and preserve domestic tranquility. Anyway, we go to Graves County, Kentucky, where, let's see here, WPSD, which is a local TV and or radio station, with urinalists appropriately trained in urinalism, report that a family of four died in a shooting. Really? They died in a shooting? I don't think anybody dies in a shooting. I think everyone in a shooting is killed. But we'll just let that go because that's modern urinalism. By the way, this is Mayfield, Kentucky, which is not a suburb of Chicago. And the state police say that a family of four was slaughtered in a shooting. Slaughtered with guns. I don't know. I would report it differently. The victims include Kyle Milliken, his wife Ashley, and their two boys, aged 13 and 8. I downloaded the story on Tuesday of this past week. I had my suspicions when I downloaded the story that Kyle, the father, had killed everyone and then himself. That's what I suspected. Why? Because this happens almost every day in America. Before COVID, after COVID, during COVID, all of it. Friday, I downloaded the update from WSIL, Mayfield, Kentucky. Not a suburb of any major metropolitan city. Just a small Kentucky town. WSIL reports the shooting of a family in Mayfield is now being considered a murder-suicide. Police believe Kyle, the father, 41 years old, shot his wife, their two sons, and then killed himself. Another family detonation occurring, as they do and did on a daily basis, whether we were freaking out about infectious diseases or not. whether we were insisting on the transgenderification of America or not, whether we were promoting rampant sexual immorality and defiance of the living God or not, a family detonation could be counted on virtually every day in America. And perhaps, you know what I'm hoping the Great Reset is? I'm hoping the Great Reset is not a reset from the free market into socialist globalism and all of that and global communist domination. I'm hoping that the global reset gets everyone's attention and resets their attention. But back where it belongs, back on the only thing that can preserve us, which is the living God and his son, Jesus Christ. Doug McBurney, welcome back. I call your attention back to God and the truth and all of that, because I mean, with the we're going to cover the spending bill, the what do they call it, the COVID relief bill, the COVID relief bill disguised as a budget, disguised as COVID relief. I'm not sure where. But I want to start out, I want to go back to, now we're not going to do a review of the best and worst, but I do want to acknowledge what I consider to be the funniest line delivered in 2020. The funniest line delivered in the media, I guess. Because there's a good chance I delivered a funnier line at a party or just a get-together or just sitting around with my extremely attractive making smart aleck comments about the news of the day. It's possible I delivered a funnier line, but this is the funniest line I observed, and it comes to us courtesy of Tucker Carlson or one of his writers. It's possible that, and here's the thing, is I have a hard time believing that Tucker Carlson could actually make anyone laugh on his own. It's just, anyway, I remember Tucker back in the PBS days, and I've you know, I don't know where, how he became what he became, but I have a hard time believing that he came up with this. By the way, what is up with the little cackle fit that Tucker goes into whenever he thinks he's amusing to others? Have you noticed that? He does it almost every time Mark Steyn's on. He says something that he think approaches Mark Steyn's level of humor, and he cackles. Very well said, Mr. Steyn. It's just really weird, that's all. Hey, Tucker, just a note. Other people are supposed to laugh at your jokes. That's the way things generally. Anyway, the funniest line of 2020 delivered on Tucker Carlson's show. In regards to Dr. Jill Biden, he said, quote, Dr. Jill Biden's PhD dissertation reads as if she was writing in a foreign language using English words. You're supposed to laugh at that.
I'm sorry. You're supposed to laugh.
Oh, I was supposed to laugh. That's I apologize if I didn't cue you all properly. I'm waiting for everyone to stop laughing because that's just a funny line that I'm going to steal. Writing in a foreign language using English words. I laughed so hard, I almost wet myself. That was funny. All right. So anyway, I will post a link to Dr. Jill Biden's PhD dissertation that acquired her her fake phony PhD. She's a doctor of education. A what? Isn't that like being a doctor of witchcraft or voodoo? It's not a hard science, okay? We can't, there's no strict definition of exactly what a doctor of educratation or whatever. But I'll post a link to it so you can all read it for yourselves. When I looked up the, when I Googled Jill Biden PhD dissertation, the a Forbes magazine slobberfest was the number one article on Google that day. I'll post a link to that too. Here's what Forbes says in defense, by the way, of Jill Biden's doctorate. This article make you want to vomit. It's a bunch of people at Forbes who have similar fake phony degrees trying to defend the idea that Jill Biden should be referred to as Dr. Biden. Dr. Well, no, that wasn't my joke. That was other people who said Dr. Biden, and that made me laugh. So here's what the Forbes magazine Slobberfest says about Dr. Jill Biden's eminent dissertation. They say, yes, there are a few infelicitous phrases and some typos, but compared to a lot of academic writing, it's admirably clear.
Doing the English
trying to sound smart because, you know.
It's American, right?
Yeah, Forbes is an American magazine, but when they want to sound smart, they write in an English accent. In a different language using English words. So, you know, obviously over at Forbes, there are more than a few writers that are somewhat self-conscious about the legitimacy of their own so-called college degrees. Anyway, I hate to break it to any of you kids out there, but anyone with a degree of any kind dated about after maybe 1989, you should be aware of the relative decline in the quality of the degree you hold as compared to a generation before. You should be aware of that. And if you're not aware of that, I think that proves my point. That you should be aware of it. So, all right. So there we go. The funniest line of 2020. And then, do I want to get into the recruiter and his accusations about COVID? I don't even want to get into it because I'm so sick of it all. Instead, I want to return. Well, let's comment on the 2021 budget / COVID relief disguised as a budget, disguised as COVID relief. COVID release? Is that was a Freudian slip. That's 2021 is what I'm hoping for. COVID release, please. Please release me, let me go. All right, no singing on air. That's even worse than Tucker laughing at his own jokes. From the Cloward and Piven file, we go to the 5,593-page budget that was passed. It was passed this past week in the dark of night, in the broad daylight, all points, and $170 million to Vietnam. An unspecified number of funds for higher education in Afghanistan, making sure that Afghanistan education is available to both women and men in a co-ed environment. So that's what they want to do. They want to start co-ed dorms in Kabul with an unspecified amount of funds. So how do they calculate that into the budget? What do we do with the unspecified part? Well, let's just call it $100 billion. No, wait, $100 million. What do you like? What do we need? What are we after here? Is there an over under on this that we need to hit? Let's see, $200,000 to Bangladesh for democracy programs. $130 million to Nepal. Is that even a country to develop democracy programs? Look at that. You got democracy programs in Bangladesh, and then we just want to start developing some in Nepal. $130 million. Pakistan, $15 million, democracy programs and gender programs. What's a gender program? I thought we already knew what our gender was. No, we don't. We need a program. In fact, the people in Pakistan need to be reprogrammed to understand their gender. That's going to cost about $15 million. Sri Lanka gets $15 million. Doesn't even say why. Oh, no, they're going to refurbish a naval ship. Hey, at least that I can relate to. If we want to help one of our allies refurbish a naval ship, I might want to keep that. That might be all right. Half a billion dollars to Belize, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Panama. Why? To address key factors in migration. Key factors. You could just leave it at address key factors, .. and we could just leave it open. And you could just have an unspecified number of funds for key factors. Let's see, another $500 million to Colombia. For counter-narcotics. These are narcotics that are placed on the counter, and then people at the CIA and the FBI smuggle them into the United States. No, I don't mean any of that. There's none of that going on. Certainly not. $33 million for democracy programs for Venezuela. Not in Venezuela, but for Venezuela. They're going to send some of those voting machines back to where they... That's to get the voting machines back to Venezuela in time for their next election, I think. All right. $132 million for assistance for Georgia. Not Georgia, not the state of Georgia in the United States, but the country of Georgia over there in the Eastern Europe there. Just assistance, that's all. $500 million for assistance to Ukraine. Hey, what do you mean by assistance? Well, we already did unspecified funds for democracy programs and key factors. How dare you ask us what assistance is for Georgia? So anyway, I don't know what they spent last year. 7 trillion, 9, was it 12 trillion, 20? I've heard all kinds of different numbers. Depending on how you count it, they spent somewhere between 7 and 20 trillion dollars. Or I should say they appropriated it. Because one of the dirty little secrets in Washington that's not really all that much of a secret if you're paying attention is that these bastards haven't even squandered the first $7 trillion they allocated during the first hysterical flip out over this virus. They haven't even squandered all of that yet. It's still sitting there allocated, waiting to be stolen and doled out to whomever they dole it out to. For key factors and assistance and democracy programs and gender programs. There's still a whole bunch of money, piles of money sitting there waiting to be, it's already been allocated to be stolen. It just hasn't been stolen yet. Now they're just reserving more money. They're reserving more money to steal while everyone's scared and freaked out and panicked. And while we witness the Marxist takedown of the Republic, the Marxist takedown of the free market, while we watch all that, they're allocating hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars more that they can get their mitts into. Should another strain of the virus be discovered and then we all get scared again, which what are the odds of that happening? Come back from that before he falls off the edge with that guitar solo. I thought he was. His blood will start shooting out of his eyes if we don't stop with that. Anyway, we go to Rand Paul in the politics file. Rand Paul railed against the trillions and trillions in government spending. He warned that Congress is essentially perpetuating lockdowns by handing money to states with leaders implementing rules that are arbitrary and unscientific. Thank you, Mr. Paul. We appreciate that. Anyway, listen to what he said early in the week. Rand Paul said this: why stop at $600 a person? Why not $1,000? Why not $2,000? At which point, Donald Trump took him up on it and said, let's do $2,000. Nancy Pelosi was like, yes, let's do $2,000. And so I know, I understand that Donald Trump did make some mention of the fact that we should try to trim some pork, but that doesn't mean anything. They're going to come through with the $2,000 plus the 2. Whatever dot, dot, dot trillion. They're just going to add it on because nobody heard the, Rand Paul goes on. He says, so-called conservatives who are quick to call out the socialism of Democrats. Hey, if you vote for this spending monstrosity, you are no better. You lose your soul. Yeah, he says the difference between the parties these days is less Adam Smith versus Marx and more Marx versus Engels. Ouch. Rand. Anyway, he hit the nail on the head right there. And Rand Paul, by the way, voted against it. So, you know, me and Rand, we may not agree on everything, but we agree on all of that. Meanwhile, what do we have here? One more thing that the COVID relief bill includes. The COVID relief bill, cloaked in the federal budget, cloaked in COVID relief. It was a double cloak job. They pulled on us there. COVID release, please, please. Anyway, the section 342 of the bill, which that right there, if there's 342 sections, I think we need to stop and maybe go back to the drawing board. Anyway, section 342 outlines a statement of policy regarding the succession or reincarnation of the Dalai Lama. No, I didn't make that up. It says the succession or the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama in a federal document produced and signed off on by the federal government of the United States of America. Wow. Okay, just so you know, that's all, okay? See, you gotta laugh or you go nuts. See, my extremely attractive audio engineer thought that I made that up as a joke and that I was laughing at my own joke, but actually... I was laughing at someone else's joke. It was Nancy Pelosi's, it might have been Mitch McConnell. And they wrote that joke, and I'm allowed to laugh at that joke. So meanwhile, we go from there into the aliens file, where former CIA director John Brennan, former CIA director John Brennan said it's wrong to believe that there is no other life forms beyond Earth. All right, now this is written by a reporter at The Sun over in England. This is the King's English. It's wrong to believe there is no other life forms beyond Earth. So that's a disagreement in number there. There is no other. No, there are no other. Okay, so let's just clarify that it's wrong to believe there are no other life forms beyond Earth. But so I corrected the grammar, but the statement itself remains incorrect. It is okay to believe that. But John Brennan, who, believe it or not, ran the CIA for crying out loud, says, quote, listen to this. This is a former director of the CIA at the highest reaches of power in the entire world. This guy was. Listen to this. He says, quote, I think some of the phenomena we're going to be seeing continue to be unexplained and might, in fact, be some type of phenomena that is the result of something that we don't yet understand. Unquote. So I'm like, huh? What did that sentence even mean? And then how does a reporter at The Sun transcribe that sentence and then include it in a story when it's obviously confusing and meaningless? You know why? Because they only care about the headline. for the youngsters, the millennials, and the vacuous empty heads out there waiting to be filled. The headline screams, ex-CIA director says UFO seen near USS Nimitz could be a different life form. That's what he says. Listen to this. Former CIA director John Brennan goes on, quote, life is defined in many different ways, unquote. I'm like, really? Is it? Life is defined in many different ways? I mean, I would have to go look up the definition of life. I'm sure it's difficult to actually quantify what is life. I mean, I remember sitting around with highly intelligent intellectuals who've influenced my life, trying to come up with one comprehensive, all-inclusive definition for the word life, and it's quite difficult. But the one thing we understood was it's not really defined in many different ways. The reason it's so hard is because it's so hard to describe the one thing that life is. Anyway, I can't remember. I should have looked this up before the show. I'll try to get back to you the next show. The definition of life. Okay, I'll try to get that. I'll get back to you on that because I had other things going on. What with the with everything that's going on, I neglected the definition of life. We may not have finished it. I and my intellectual cabal in the think tank there, we may not have actually signed off on a final definition of life. If we have, I will bring it to you next time. Until then, we'll have to go with John Brennan, who says, quote, it's a bit presumptuous and arrogant for us to believe that there is no other form of life anywhere else in the universe, unquote. Yeah. Now, Mr. Brennan, as former head of the CIA, a very prestigious position, I understand, and we're all very impressed. Mr. Brennan, just because you are presumptuous and arrogant, please don't project that onto the reasonable, decent people out here who just doubt that there's life on other planets, okay? That, it's not because we're like you and presumptuous and arrogant. It's because of the complete lack of evidence for any life on any other planet, even though we've looked at other planets for my whole life. All right, so we'll get back. I have to put this in the update file there for next week. Get back to you on the definition of life. From there, we go into the Dim New World file, where Google, let's see, film director Robbie Starbuck, are you familiar with his body of work? He asked. His extremely attractive audio engineer. No? Me neither. I'd never heard of Robbie Starbuck. I would have thought that he was the founder of the coffee shop. That's, if you'd have said, who's Robbie Starbuck? I would have said, I don't know, is that a character from a movie? Space movie or coffee guy? I don't know. Anyway, he got on Twitter railing against the fact. So he has parental controls on his kid's Google account because he says, my kids have to have Google now for homeschooling. I'm not sure why that is because I do homeschool, right? We homeschool? Actually, my extremely attractive audio engineer does most of the homeschooling, and we don't need Google for homeschooling, but Starbuck does. So he set up parental controls on the kid's Google account. And what happened? Google sent an email to his child to tell his child that his parents were monitoring his Google account. Wow. Uh-huh. And then Starbuck goes online and rants and raves about this because he's shocked that Google and the public schools, how could this happen? I've handed my children over to the government schools for their government-sanctioned indoctrination, and now Google wants them to know that I'm watching there. How could this happen? Anyway, when asked about it, the company pointed to both the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child and the recently passed UK Age-Appropriate Design Code. What? The Age-Appropriate Design Code. That scares me, just knowing that that exists. See, you got a bunch of secular deviant perverts using the term age appropriate in anything, I get nervous, okay? But that's what they cite, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child and the Age Appropriate Design Code. That's what they adhere to when it comes to privacy. The United Kingdom the Age Appropriate Design Code states, quote, children who are subject to persistent parental monitoring may have a diminished sense of their own private space, a diminished sense of their own identity, particularly as the child matures and their expectation of privacy increases, unquote. That's so you got a deviant, queer, British administrator in the bureaucracy there, actually thinking about your child's sense of identity and privacy as your child matures. That gives me the creeps. That's all. And that's what Google adheres to. I mean, forget the law and our common heritage here in the United States and the respect that we have for each other as parents. Forget all of that. Throw that all out the window. It's the UK age-appropriate design code as we consider your child's maturing. Very disturbing. The British code, by the way, directs that children as young as 5 should be provided materials to explain that their parent is being told what they do online. Yeah, so the government advocates that private industry dominated by sexual deviant perverts be able to tell your kids that you're watching what they do.
And this guy's a filmmaker.
By the way, Robbie Starbuck is a film director. Yes, he's in the industry. And even he's a little bit surprised at the... Anyway, folks, the rebellion is out in the open again. And this happens from time to time throughout history. Most of history... civilized history, I should say, when we're all at peace with one another and we're not at each other's throats and slaughtering one another and throwing each other into prison and making wild accusations against each other and putting each other into show trials and locking each other into torture boxes. The other times when we're all civil, the rebellion is kept under wraps because you can't be an open, bald-faced rebel in the face of everything that's good and right and just and what keeps us all secure in our persons, in our papers, and our wealth. You're not allowed to just rebel against that openly. In fact, from the founding of this nation up until, a half a century ago, the rebellion was not allowed to take place in the open. It was kept in the shadows, in certain dark parts of town, but it's out in the open now. Again, and this happens right before the collapse of empires and nations. The masks come off, or in this case, the masks go on, and the rebels operate freely in public, in broad daylight, in plain view of everyone, and then they're not allowed to be criticized. In fact, the population is compelled to celebrate the rebellion. And if you don't celebrate it, and if you posit even an iota of resistance against the rebellion, well, then, these days, I mean, your account will be tagged. I'm sure I've been tagged for a visit at a later date by someone. We go now to the widespread Newspeak file where... herd immunity. Have you heard of the term herd immunity? It's a well-known concept. It's a well-known concept that it's been around for a while. Let's see. I've got the American Institute for Economic Research says that herd immunity is an observation that you can trace to biological reality or statistical probability theory, whichever you prefer. It is certainly not a strategy, so ignore anything you hear about that. But herd immunity, the term, the concept, speaks directly and with explanatory power to the empirical observation that respiratory viruses are either widespread and mostly mild, like the common cold, or very severe and short-lived, like Ebola. So why is this observation made about respiratory viruses? It's because when a virus kills its host, it cannot migrate. The more aggressively it does this, the less it spreads, like Ebola. If the virus doesn't kill its host, it can hop to others. And when you get a virus and you fight it off, your immune system encodes that information in a way that helps you build immunity against it. And when that happens to enough people, the virus loses its pandemic quality and becomes merely endemic, which is to say it's predictable and manageable. Well... By the way, the American Institute for Economic Research says this is what one might call virology and immunology 101. So this is that little bit of common knowledge that I thought we all had before this massive flip out, freak out, and all of that. That's I thought we all understood this, but apparently we did not. The discovery of this dynamic, by the way, is, according to the AIER, is a major reason why public health became so smart in the 20th century. We avoided the medieval tendency to run around with our hair on fire, but rather used rationality and intelligence in the management of infectious diseases. But that was until the World Health Organization, just this past fall, summer into fall, has decided to delete everything we just read from Cell Biology Basics. That's right. The World Health Organization has changed their statement on herd immunity in a Soviet-like way, and they've taken the additional step of actually mischaracterizing the structure and functioning of vaccines. And then I'll post a link to this. This is fascinating if you're into understanding the Soviet takedown of free markets, then this is a textbook landmark that one should recognize in the pathway to hell that we are on right now. They got a screenshot from June 9th of 2020 from the World Health Organization itself. Here's how they described herd immunity back in June. Herd immunity happens when a population is immune either through vaccination or immunity development through previous infection. That's what the WHO used to say. Now, they say herd immunity is a concept used for vaccination, in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. So do you get the subtle shift there? They've changed it from being defined as a naturally occurring event that can be assisted through vaccination to insisting that vaccination is the foundation of herd immunity. Anyway, I'll link to it. You can read the rest of it, but that's the road that we're on. The Soviet takedown, the Marxist takedown of not only the free market, but the Marxist takedown of free thought, which is happening right now. And do I want to do that? No, I want to do this from the Real Science File. Town Hall reports that no amount of evidence, data, trends, facts, studies, or science will ever convince most public health officials that masks aren't stopping and slowing the spread of COVID-19. That's right. We're in a post-evidence, post-data, post-fact, post-science environment. This is a Soviet environment where only the spoken word of the authorities is in force. In fact, they trump all facts, all evidence, all data, all trends, all studies, all science. It's all trumped by the stream of consciousness vomited out by the authorities intended to lord it over us and take away any semblance of liberty that any of us had left. That trumps all of the rest. And Town Hall goes on that 90% of the country are complying with the mandates. But predictably, the virus goes right on virusing, as highly contagious respiratory viruses unfortunately do, especially in cold weather. We predicted this back in June, the second wave. We told you what this was going to be all about. That we knew cases were going to go up in the fall and into the winter. We knew it. And we told you people that it would be used to bludgeon you. To bludgeon you with your own liberty and to take your liberty away. Well, the website Rational Ground just released comprehensive data analysis of masked versus non-masked counties in Florida. I didn't know there were any non-masked counties. I mean, I only operate in a couple of geographical areas, and they're all both the geographical areas that I operate in are utterly hysterical. It's not 90% compliance with the masks. It's 99.959%. I go into a store with 300 other people. I'm the only guy without a mask. And it's not because I want to make other people sick. It's because I know it's stupid. Just in case you were wondering. I actually care about other people. Let's see. One would expect, according back to Town Hall, one would expect to see that the counties that went maskless would be dumpster fires compared to the masked counties. At the very least, the numbers should favor the masked. But the data turned out to be the mask cult's worst nightmare. That's right. Okay. I'll post it. I don't want to go through the data, but basically the masks don't mean anything. Shockingly. They went on to compare national numbers pitting states that didn't have mask mandates against the masked. And guess what? Yeah. Incontrovertible data evidence that mask mandates do... listen to this. Town Hall says they do little to nothing. Why did they have to put the little two in there? When they just quoted us data from left, right, top, bottom, all over the place, from three different dimensions, the data says it does nothing. Not little to nothing, nothing. Could we just settle on nothing? No, we can't. Because everyone's afraid. Everyone's afraid. Even the conservatives who want to speak out against this are afraid to speak out in a full-throated defense of liberty against the tyranny of fear and hysteria over infectious disease. And that's why the overlords have acquired now the power, as exercised at the top of the show, in Beijing, where you would expect this type of thing, right? In Beijing, the communist overlords use whatever is conveniently at hand to lord their authority over their peasantry. Well, now that's here. That's us. How do we get that back? I don't know that we ever get that back. Even Town Hall has to say mask mandates do little to nothing to stop or even slightly curb the spread of COVID-19. All right, let's see. Oh, here we go. From the Dim New World file, about 500 relatives of people who died with COVID-19. The article says from. I'm going to say with. Over in Italy, 500 relatives of dead people have begun legal action against the government, seeking millions and millions and hundreds of millions of euros in damages. They say, quote, "This case is our Christmas gift to all those who should have done what they were supposed to do, but didn't." That's according to the lawyer in charge of the group of parents and families and of this. And I protested this. I was like, how can people be suing over the fact that people died from an infectious disease? And my extremely attractive audio engineer pointed out to me that, well, had the government not given people the idea that they were going to control all this with the lockdowns and the masks and all the insanity, well, then the lawyers wouldn't have had a preface, wouldn't have had a predicate idea here for filing suit. The government set themselves up to be sued by the people over the coronavirus epidemic. And I would say that they did it intentionally to destroy themselves so that they could set up a new government of, by, and for the overlords of the Marxist dictatorship. And this brings me back to what I didn't want to mention earlier, which I have to find it now in my pile as the music goes. Anyway, I'm talking to a recruiter calls me up to recruit me, thinking I'm looking for a job. And I tell him, I hope you're doing okay through this pandemic. I know it's been terrible. So he starts to tell me how, oh, you don't know the half of it. My daughter's husband is a lawyer, and he was deposing a neurologist. And in court, the neurologist refused to wear a mask, and he spread it. And then he didn't let anybody know, and then nobody knew, and now everybody's positive. And I said, hold on. I said, stop with that. I said, do you hear what you just said? I said, you're gonna... I said, do you realize it throughout all of human history, we've never held each other legally accountable for the incidental transmission of a pathogen in the normal course of human activity? We've never done that before. I said, do you understand the civilizational impact of what you just said? Do you understand the societal catastrophe that ensues based on what you just said? Silence. He didn't even know what to say. It might have been the fact that I was screaming at him. Because I'm sorry, folks, I lose my mind. And at some point, even a raging, screaming lunatic will be looked at as sane because everything is so insane. And so, anyway, I said, I don't think you understand. Goodbye. And I hung up on him. He has not called me back. Although he called an associate of mine and asked if he should apologize. And my associate said, probably don't waste your time. Not going to make that big of a difference. Not with McBurney. All right. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for being here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Real Science Radio, at American Right to Life, and at the Personhood Alliance, by the way. And my other brother, Daryl, of course, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.